This is Audible.
Pennies, the Dollar Series, Book 1, written by Pepper Winters, narrated by Kylie Stewart and Eric Rolon. Tamsin. Freedom. Such a modest word. It carried very little importance for those who had it, but for those who didn't, it was the most precious, prized, and promised hope of all. I supposed I was lucky to know what freedom felt like. For 18 years I'd been free. Free to learn what I wanted, befriend who I liked, and flirt with boys who passed my rigorous criteria. I was a simple girl, with ideals and dreams. Encouraged by society to believe nothing could hurt me. That I should strive for an excellent career, and no one could stop me. Rules would keep me safe. Police would keep the monsters away. And I could remain innocent and naive to the darkness of the world. Freedom. I had it. But then, I lost it. Murdered, resuscitated, and sold. I lost my freedom for so many years. Until the day he entered my cage. Him, with the black eyes and blacker soul. The man who challenged my owner and set my imprisonment on an entirely different path. Tamsin. Dear Diary. No, that didn't sound right. Far too light-hearted for my tale. Dear Universe. Scratch that. Too grandiose. To the person reading this. Too vague. To the person I wish would help me. That would get me in trouble. And I refuse to sound weak. Not if those words were the only thing a stranger would remember me by. To... Tapping the broken pencil against my temple, I did my best to focus. For weeks I'd been confined like a zoo animal, being acclimatized to its new cage. I'd been fed, washed, and given medical attention from my rough arrival. I had a bed with sheets, a flushing toilet, and shampoo in the shower. I had the basics that all human and non-human life required. But I wasn't living. I was dying. They just couldn't see it. Wait, I know. Inspiration struck as I came up with a perfect name to address this sad letter to. The title was the only right in this wrong, wrong new world. To no one. The moment I pressed those three words onto my parchment, I couldn't stop the memories unfolding. My left hand shook as I kept the toilet tissue flat, while my right flew, slowly transcribing my past. I was 18 when I died. I remember that day better than any other in my short life, and I know you're rolling your eyes, saying it only happened 3 weeks ago. But believe me, I will never forget it. I know some people say certain events imprint on their psyche forever, and up until now, I haven't had anything stick in such a way. You see no one. I guess you could have called me a brat. Some might even say I deserve this. No, that's a lie. No one would wish this on their worst enemy. But the fact remains, only you know I'm not dead. I'm alive, and in this cell about to be sold. I've been hurt, touched, violated in every sense but rape, and stripped of everything I used to be. But to my mother? I'm dead. I died. Who knows if she'll ever truly find out what happened to me? The scribbling of my pencil stopped. I sucked in a ragged breath, trembling hard as I relived what I'd been through. My will to stay breathing had vanished. It'd taken them a while to break me, but they had. And now that they'd achieved their goal, I was nothing more than cargo waiting for the transaction to line their pockets. For days, all I'd had for entertainment were my chaotic thoughts, awful memories, an overwhelming panic of what lay ahead. but that was before I found the chewed up, snapped in half pencil beneath the bed. The find had been better than food or freedom. Better because my traffickers minutely controlled both those things. I had no power to sway the regimented arrival of breakfast and dinner, nor the ability to halt the fact I was being sold like meat to the highest bidder. I had no control over being alone in a tiny room that had once been a hotel suite before its premises were bought for more unsavory stays. The towels were threadbare, with a sigil of some decade-ago establishment, and the carpet swirled with golds and bronze, hinting the decor hadn't been updated since the 70s. Was that how long the pencil had lurked beneath my bed? Were the bite marks on the wood given by a rowdy toddler, waiting for its parents to stop fussing so they could explore a new city? Or had a maid lost it, while tucking starched white sheets with military precision? I'd never know. But I liked to make up fantasies because I had nothing else to do. I spent my achingly boring days going over every nook and cranny of my jail. They'd broken my spirit, washed away my fight, but they couldn't stop the determined urge inside me. The instinct everyone had, or at least I thought everyone had. I'd been alone for so long now, I didn't know what the other girls processed with me would do. Did they lie star-spread on the bed and wait for their future? Did they huddle in the corner and beg for their fathers to stop this nightmare? Or did they accept, because it was easier to accept than to fight? Me? I ran my rubbed raw fingertips over every wall, every crack, every painted and locked window frame. I crawled on my hands and knees, searching for something to help me. And by helping me, I didn't know if I meant as a weapon to fight my way out, or something to end my struggle before it truly began. It'd taken me days to go over every square inch, but all I'd found was this half-mangled pencil. A gift. A treasure. The nub was almost down to the wood, and I wouldn't have long before I had to find a way to sharpen my precious possession. But I'd worry about that another day. Just like I'd become a master at shoving aside my worries about everything else. The one thing I didn't find was any paper. Not in the drawers of the weathered desk or in the cupboard beneath a non-functioning television. The only apparatus I could write on was toilet paper, and the pencil wasn't too keen on that idea, tearing the soft tissue rather than imprinting its silvery lines. Nevertheless, I was determined to leave some sort of note behind, some piece of me that these bastards hadn't taken and never would. Taking another deep breath, I shoved aside my current conditions and clutched the pencil harder. Glancing up the door to make sure I was alone, I spread out my square of toilet tissue, making it tight and writable, and continued with my note. I wish I could say a monster killed me, that a terrible accident caused this, and I can say that, to a degree. However, the real reason I'm dead and a new toy about to be sold is mainly because of my upbringing. That poise and confidence my mother drilled into me, it didn't grant me in good stead for a profitable career or handsome husband. It pissed people off. I came across as stuck up, a know-it-all, and vain. It made me a target. I don't know if anyone will ever see this but you, no one. But if they do, I hope they forget what I'm about to admit. I'm an only daughter to a single parent. I love my mother. I do. But if I ever survive what's about to happen to me, and by some miracle I find freedom again, I'll keep this part to myself when I recount my time in purgatory. I love my mother, but I hate her. I miss my mother, but I never want to see her again. I obeyed my mother, but I want to curse her for eternity. She's the only one I can blame, the one responsible for me becoming nothing more than a whore. Tamsin. 2 days passed. In the world I'd been stolen from, 2 days was nothing. 2 alarm clocks, 2 lessons at university, two evenings of talking on the phone to my friends, and two nights of wonderfully protected sleep where I stupidly believed no one could harm me. In this new world, 2 days was enough for me to scratch at non-existent itches just to feel something. 2 days meant I wore down my pencil, then slowly picked at the wood to reveal more lead, so I had something to occupy my time. 2 days meant I continued writing my toilet paper novel, all the while not knowing that at the end of 48 hours, my brief stay in limbo was over. My processing was over. My sale date complete. They came for me at dinner time. Instead of the usual bland rice and chicken or watery stew shoved through the hole in the wall, the door opened. The door opened. For the first time in weeks. I'd been so alone with only grimy mirrors, reflecting my slowly sallowing complexion, for company that the visit clutched my heart. When I'd first been taken, I'd been curvy with adolescent softness, perky breasts and rounded tummy. My brown hair curled and dyed a rich chocolate, thanks to an appointment with my personal groomer at my mother's demands to look my best for her charity function. The same function I'd been stolen from. Before, my thoughts had been superficial, wondering how to lose my puppy fat and apply my makeup like models on YouTube. Despite my prissy appearance, I was smart and had just enrolled at a prestigious university to study psychology, just like my mother wanted. Following in her footsteps, like she'd arranged all my life. Now, my appearance and thoughts were of an entirely different girl, no longer a teenager but a woman. My hair had faded back to its normal dark tracheal brown. My frame had lost its curves thanks to the low-calorie, infrequent menu I enjoyed. I supposed I would have been happy if I still had my freedom. I got what I wanted. I was a little skinnier, and no longer cared about hair dyes and fashion. Instead, I hated my transformation, because it added another chain to the proverbial collar webbing around my throat.
Come.
The man clicked his fingers. Seeing another human ought to have filled me with some sort of relief. Something intrinsic inside me needed company, even if that company was my doom. But I couldn't see his eyes or mouth or nose. He was a phantom, a caricature, hidden behind the Venetian mask of a black and white joker with tears dotting his cheeks. Were the tears for me, or just a mockery? I took a step toward him, hating the obedient cower they'd instilled in me the first few days of my imprisonment. The bruises had faded, but the lessons had not. But then I stopped, looking back at the toilet tissue sheets of letters. Letters telling my story. A story that would forever change the moment I left this room. I had nothing of value anymore. The rags I wore from so many previous trafficked women weren't mine. The pillows I cried myself to sleep on weren't mine. My life wasn't even mine anymore. The desire to keep my scribbled thoughts were nonsensical, but I refused to leave yet another piece of me behind. If I must face this new trial, I would do it with my past fisted in my palm, like a talisman reminding me if I could breathe it, I could write it, and when I wrote it, I would find freedom from it.
Now, girl.
The man stalked into the room, his mountainous posture ready to hurt. Before he could grab me, I scurried to the desk and scooped up the flimsy pieces of my life. Clutching them tight, I ducked around his large girth and vanished out the door. Out the door. I'm out of the room. The familiarity of my imprinted space was gone as I padded barefoot down the corridor graced with the same gold and bronze carpet. The heavy footfalls of my captor thundered behind me. He didn't grab me or force me to slow. He knew as well as I did there was no escape. I'd been blindfolded when I'd been driven here, but they let me have my sight back once inside the building. As we moved past locked rooms like any normal hotel, I forced myself to stand taller and brace myself for whatever came next. You can get through this. They wanted me alive, not dead. For some reason, that thought didn't give the intended comfort. If anything, It made my fear escalate.
Get in the elevator. We're going down.
The man's voice boomed in the claustrophobic space. Turning left, I entered the open foyer where four silver doors sat two by two. I cursed the slight shake in my hand as I pressed the button, summoning one of them to open. The chimes sounded immediately, the elevator groaning wide, welcoming me into a dingy mirrored box. I couldn't look at my reflection as I stepped inside and turned to face the closing exit. My legs peeked beneath the faded yellow shorts I'd been given. My skinny arms held the last remnants of my juvenile age in the baggy, moth-eaten grey t-shirt. I didn't care to look at myself because the outward body didn't portray the inward soul. Yes, I looked broken. Yes, I obeyed implicitly. But inside, I'd somehow glued the parts they'd shattered into something treasured. I was stronger now than when I'd first arrived. I was no longer the wailing girl who'd been stripped, rough-washed with angry paws and catalogued with other women. I kept my screams inside because there, no one could hear me. No one could use them against me. Silence was a weapon I could wield better than panic. And if it meant I never uttered another word until I found freedom, then so be it. The man crowded beside me, pressing level 4. Judging from the numbers on the hotel room doors we'd passed, I deduced they'd stored me on level 12. How many girls were locked behind those barricades? How many floors held prisoners just waiting to be sold? The descent swooped a little too fast, gravity clutching my tummy. I held my breath as the elevator opened again, revealing an identical landing platform. The man nudged me between my shoulder blades. I shot forward. No stumbling, no begging. Not one question or plea. There was no point. I rubbed my cheek where I'd been punched within hours of my arrival, all those weeks ago. I demanded all sorts of things. I'd promised them pain once my mother found them. I'd believed I was a princess with a regiment of knights who would chase after me. I'd quickly learned with their boots in my stomach and fists in my face that everything I trusted was a lie.
Down here.
The man pointed at the left corridor. Padding in the chosen direction, I shivered as the softness of the carpet did its best to comfort me. The hotel was the perfect backdrop of nothingness. The temperature hovered at comfortable, so I never shivered or sweated. The lights shone an even illumination, so I never squinted or strained. Every sense controlled until I forgot what the wind felt like on my skin and the sun's rays upon my face. Would I be allowed outside now? Where is he taking me? The man paced in front of me, pushing open a door to the old gym. The hotel must have been a 4-star establishment, once upon a time, before it being bought and shot to ruin. Entering the female changing room, where the ivory tiles had turned grimy and ancient hairdryers hung like gas masks, I stopped for further instruction. Hanging on the wall was a garment bag, zipped but translucent, showing a white dress. Even from here, the pearled bodice and diamante scarf draped on the hanger spoke of finery not welcome in such a downtrodden place. The man behind his Venetian mask muttered,
"Shower, do your hair, and get dressed. I'll collect you in 1 hour."
1 hour of primping? For what? He leaned in close, smelling of fried food and beer.
"Don't get any thoughts of running."
Cocking his head, he stepped back as two other girls entered the space.
"Ah, company."
The recent arrivals, Shepherd, pointed at matching garment bags in the opposite wall. Their dresses were black and grey.
"Get ready, both of you."
Just like every facet of sensation was stolen by regimented air, heat, and approved stimuli, so too were our wardrobes. White, black, and grey. Monotones with no spectrum of colour. My handler nodded at his lion-masked colleague.
"You stand guard. I'll tell the boss we're almost ready."
The girls glanced at me. I glanced at them. We all glanced at the men who held our fate in their dirty clutches. The urge to ask what would happen burned my tongue. But I didn't. not because I daren't or lack the courage, but because I already knew the answer. The cold laughter, the mocking undertones, and the cryptic reply meant to terrify rather than console. No, I wouldn't ask. But my conclusion didn't reach the girl closest to me, wearing a tatty pink sundress with tangled blonde hair.
Why are you doing this? What's going to happen to us?
Venetian Mask looked at Lion. Together they advanced on her, backing her against the tiled wall. They let the force of their aura batter her rather than physically maul, leaving me to think they'd hurt us to control us at the beginning. But now we were worth more unmarred. After all, what good was merchandise if it was ugly and bruised?
I told you already, you're going to be sold, pretty angel.
Lion stroked her cheek.
You're going to be chosen and transacted, and when that sweet, sweet money lands in our hands, you'll be gone. Bye-bye. No longer our concern.
The other girl with lackluster red hair tripped backward, her mouth parting in a silent wail. As if they didn't know. As if they'd spent the same amount of time as I had locked and alone and didn't see something like this coming. Perhaps I'd read too many dark books or watched too many crime shows on television. Either way, I wasn't stupid, and I definitely wasn't naive anymore. Just like I would never go to university to finish my psychology degree, these girls would never return to their lives. Unlike me, who blamed her mother for her mess, they might blame a bad boyfriend or idiotic decision of drinking too much and trusting the wrong person. No matter what led us here, we were on the same journey, just with different destinations, determined by whoever bought us. Turning away from the tears and laughing captors, I stripped from my shorts and t-shirt, placed my precious toilet paper words on the counter, and walked straight into a shower. There were no blinds or screens. My nakedness remained on display as I turned on body temperature water and squirted unscented shampoo into my hair. Being nude in front of strangers would have petrified me a month ago. Now, I no longer put stock in such things, because I had no control over who looked or touched or ultimately raped and destroyed. Don't think about that. Gritting my teeth, I lathered shampoo into bubbles. No aroma or comfort came from the soap. I missed my watermelon body scrub and raspberry lip gloss. I hankered for fizzy drinks and a soft fleece blanket after a long day of studying. What I wouldn't give to smell again, hear again, feel again. While the other girls mourned their lives and feared their future, I welcomed relief. I was glad the stage was over. Another hour in that room would have driven me completely mad. At least this way, I had something to do, someone to challenge, someplace else to go. And who knows, maybe I'll find a way to escape. The noise of the shower as I held my head under its stream blocked all sounds. I kept my eyes closed while lathering my hair and didn't turn until I'd washed, used the razor provided to shave, and wrapped yet another threadbare towel around myself. The men in their masks had gone, and the women had copied me, each taking a stall and dutifully but tearfully washing. This wasn't a simple cleansing or preparation. This was a baptism into hell.
Tamsin. To no one. My mother always told me that bullies are people too. She warned me never to judge first impressions or be superficial like others. She said it wasn't my place to critique, not knowing if they were hurting or living a terrible life while picking on others. Well, I wouldn't disagree based on my current predicament, but then again, these men aren't bullies. They're monsters. So I guess my mother's rule is safe. Don't judge. Listen. She promised me it would keep me in good stead, and I'd make friends, not enemies. What she didn't tell me was nobody liked to be watched like a specimen, and everyone hated a compassionate know-it-all, and that was why I was targeted. Or at least, I believe it was. You see, no one, it all started as a normal evening. I dressed in my bedroom opposite my mother's. I slipped into the low heels she'd chosen,
in the off-the-shoulder gown she'd selected, and hopped into the taxi she'd arranged. I was thankful to be included, because normally I wasn't. I was proud of my mother. Respectful. Wary. But not adoring. She loved me, but didn't have time for silly children, even if that silly child was her own. She made sure I was old and wise so I could fend for myself, while she dealt with adult bullies on a daily basis. She sold her services to the state to ease the burdens of psychopaths and pedophiles. She treated us all like guinea pigs, wanting into our minds, asking why I did something instead of reprimanding, demanding articulated words rather than messy displays of emotion. My friends called me crazy for trusting my mother's guidance, but I was a good girl, a kind daughter, a child guided by a woman who'd earned her living by lifting the veil in which humans hide. She made me believe I had the same magic, and it was my duty to help those with such a gift. She made me what I was. I suppose I have to be grateful for that. Without her strict upbringing, I would be like the girls sniveling even now in the corner while we waited to be collected for whatever comes next. I'm thankful to the woman who birthed me, for giving me these life skills. But it doesn't mean I'll ever forgive her. From the hours of 9 p.m. to midnight, I was safe. I mingled with suits and entertained in whispers, representing my mother and her business with the poise she demanded. Only around that witching hour, when rules relax and tiredness creeps beneath fun obscurity, I met a man. While my mother intoxicated benefactors with her wit and hard-edged charm, earning generous donations for her charity for the mental well-being of people on death row, why anyone would want to donate, I had no idea, a mystery man called Mr. Hewitt flirted with me. He laughed at my teenage jokes, he indulged my childish whims, and I fell for every goddamn trick in his dastardly arsenal. While others skirted this man, instinctively noticing something evil, I made it my mission to make him feel welcome. I didn't let the voice inside my head warn me away. Instead, I believed in the firm and fast rule of don't judge. Listen. My mother taught me wrong. She made me sympathetic rather than fear. She made me believe in good rather than recognize the bad. I danced with my murderer. I smiled when he corralled me outside. I tried to soothe while he threatened. And when his hands went around my throat and strangled me, I still believed I could redeem him. He killed me on the balcony of the ballroom, only meters away from my mother. And the entire time he did it, I still thought he was the one who needed saving, not me.
Time's up. You'd better be ready to go.
My pencil stopped hacking at my toilet vellum. I needed to write about what happened after I fell unconscious into Mr. Hewitt's killer embrace. How he'd brought me back to life in a world I no longer recognized. How everything I'd known and everything that made sense was suddenly scrambled and utterly foreign. But Venetian Mask had returned, crossing his arms over his huge untoned bulk. Even his voice was nondescript, with no accent or hint. Without facial features or racial clues, I had no idea where I'd been transported and what country I would belong. Scrunching up my handful of pencil-scribbled paragraphs, I stuffed the tissue down my pearl-beaded bodice. My fingers trailed up the decorative dress to whisper over my throat. Even now, the shadows of finger bruises marked me. Being strangled was a painful death, and one that left remnants in both aches and contusions, always there to remind when glimpsed in a mirror. He'd killed me. I hadn't been able to stop him. So why couldn't he have left me dead? Why couldn't this have been over rather than just beginning? Because you're worth far more alive. I straightened my back. I blow-dried my hair and applied the mascara and lipstick provided. I didn't know why I bothered. However, prettiness might be a curse that could grant me a kinder fate. In my unsettling rationale, I figured the more someone paid for me, the better my overall treatment might be. Unless that backfires and a psychotic billionaire buys me for marksman practice. My throat closed as my heart did its best to find a stepladder and climb its way out of my chest. I swallowed it down again. As much as I didn't want to face this, I needed my heart beating if I stood any chance of surviving. Clipping over the tiles, I smoothed my white gown as if being presented to the Prime Minister. The quaint buttons on the back had been secured thanks to the help of the redhead. The satin skin kissed my body, with no underwear to protect the sensitive skin of my nipples, and Corin whispered over the floor a millimeter from being too long. The measurements were exact, right down to the size 5 white heels on my feet. I'd never been a fan of white. I much preferred to wear black, because it gave the image of authority, according to my mother, or pastels and colors depending on my mood at class. White was too high maintenance. It got dirty with life stains within moments of putting it on, but it also granted an innocence that I understood why my traffickers had dressed me in it. My hair seemed glossier, my green eyes bigger, my complexion prettier. The girl gowned in black looked harsh and older, while the redhead in grey seemed washed out and already begging for a grave. If we were about to enter a wolf's den, I didn't want a smell of blood before the fight. Keeping my shoulders back, I strode past the guard and fell into step with Lion Mask. Silently, I followed our shepherds and led the sad train of slaves down the corridor, into the elevators, and down to level 2. Their commotion welcomed with sounds of conversation, masculine laughter and a softly played piano. It'd been so long since I'd heard music or felt the warm buffet of bodies that I lost myself. Forgetting my need to remain aloof and untouched, I slammed to a stop. My forgetfulness earned me a swat to the side of my head as Lion Mask shoved me forward. I stumbled for the first time since I'd answered back during the first beating. I'd endured and suffered through the lesson all over again. Eyes locked onto me from all corners of the room. Hungry eyes. Mad eyes. Lust-filled, terrible eyes. All peering from behind a treasure trove of papier-mâché and plaster of Paris masks. A spotlight moved from the glittering silver ball, drenching the space with twinkling lights directly on us. The piano stopped playing as the two girls and I made our way to the center of what used to be a dance floor, under the guidance of Venetian and Lion. Now, it was a market pen, complete with podium for inspection and auctioneer with his gavel. The two girls I'd showered with sobbed quietly as they were lined up in a procession of other women. Women who'd lived in this hotel with me, but I'd never seen. Women of all ages and ethnicities, all stolen from their rightful place and treated like livestock. My friends wouldn't really miss me because they didn't understand me. I had no boyfriend to mourn me, no father to come search for me. As far as connections and family went, I was lacking. I suppose it made it easier for me to switch off the desire to love and be loved, knowing I would never feel such a thing again. But it also hurt more because at least, if I'd had those things, I could say I'd lived briefly, that I hadn't taken my freedom for granted. Now, all I would know was captivity. As a man in a perfectly pressed tux and black executioner's mask strode around the room holding a microphone to his hidden lips, the atmosphere hushed in expectation.
Welcome, gentlemen, to the QMB, also known as Quarterly Market of Beauties.
Sweeping his hand down the line of merchandise, he said,
as you can see, we have quite a turnout for you tonight.
One by one, he pointed at us. We were the only ones barefaced and on display. One by one, we shrank into ourselves. 12 counted before me. I was lucky 13. Or was that unlucky 13? All I needed was a black cat, a fallen down ladder, and a witch's superstition to well and truly curse me. The man strode proudly as if he'd personally created each and every one of us. If he was in charge of stripping us of everything and rebuilding us into nothing, then perhaps he had. Maybe he did own us, and had full right to sell something I no longer recognized.
As usual, we have a range of beauties available for your pleasure. You've all had time to peruse their files and photos we supplied.
Wait, Photos and files? Had our rooms had cameras? Were we secretly catalogued and investigated? My chest rose and fell, pressing against the words I'd scribbled on the stolen toilet paper. Did they know about my tentative writing? Would they take it away from me? My questions kept me occupied while the man cut over the dance floor and grabbed the first girl in the lineup. Dragging her forward, he forced her onto the podium, holding her until she caught her balance. The spotlight showed her every stress line, every terror, every tear. She couldn't hide anything beneath such an invasive glare. Her facial nakedness was made worse as no humanity stared back. Only animal masks and robot masks and all manner of creations. I don't want to look like her. I wouldn't let these assholes see my horror. If they refused to let us see them, I refused to let them see me. I didn't have feathers or diamantes to hide my true self, but I did have willpower. It took four girls to school my features into a rigid, unfeeling shell. Another four girls for me to delete emotion from my gaze and grab what was left to stuff into a newly formed suitcase inside, or should I say soul case, and slam the lid closed. It took the final four girls to find a way to lock that soul case, banish all my secrets, hopes and aspirations, and toss away the key. My name was Tamsin Blythe, but as my turn rolled around, and I was forced to stand proud and prideful on the podium, they gave me a new name. A name forever reminding me of where I came from, but stripping me of everything else at the same time. Pimlico. After the London suburb where my mother's function was held. No longer Tamsin. Pimlico. Pim. I'm glad. I no longer had to fake being strong and aloof. Pimlico was strong and aloof. Tamsin was locked deep, deep inside and forgotten as I blinked in the bright lights and heard the most damning thing of all.
I'll pay 100,000.
I'll go 200.
I'll outbid you all and double it.
The room sucked in a gasp as a silhouette of a tall, slender man stepped onto the dance floor.
$400,000 for the girl in white.
My heart once again tried to build a parachute and escape. That was the highest bid of the evening. It disgusted me. How dared they decide my worth, what my fellow slaves were worth? No price tag existed on a human life. My life. I hadn't said a word since the third day of my incarceration. I hadn't answered their questions about my age or sexual history. I refused to share any number of invasive requests. I'd taken that small power even though they no doubt knew everything they needed, thanks to my driver's license and social media. But now, here on the eve of my sale, I had something to say. Bully my hands, I glared at the indistinct man who wished to own me. My voice rang out, soft but pure, the only feminine sound in a nest of men. I bid 1,000,000. Let me buy myself, sir, and I will forget any of this ever happened. The bot girls, already ushered and clung to by new masters, gasped. My audacity could shorten my life or prolong it. Either way, it was a gamble I willingly and unknowingly choose. I didn't have 1,000,000. My mother might if she sold our two-bedroom flat in London. But just like I pushed other worries to be solved on a later day, I pushed this one aside too. Money was just money. Pennies added to dollars and dollars added to hundreds. In the end, the prettily printed paper was worthless because inflation stole its numerical profit, unable to keep those who owned it happy. My life, on the other hand, would increase in value, growing wiser and richer in experience the longer I survived. I was an investment, not a liability, and I would invest everything I had into giving myself a future. The man stepped forward, cutting through the glare so his silhouette turned into physical mass. His dirty blonde hair was the only thing visible behind the princely mask of some English lord.
You're bidding on yourself?
His voice sounded foreign, but I couldn't place the accent. Mediterranean, perhaps. tipping my chin the podium put me higher than him, as I looked down as if he were my subject, and I was his queen. I would rule him. I would never bow. That is correct. I am too expensive for you. £1,000,000, not dollars. I bid well over your pathetic amount. The auctioneer fumbled, clearly uncertain what to do with this change of events. His business was in the money-making game. Selling women was high profit, but if he could earn more by selling me to myself, what did he care if certain corporate rules were broken? He got paid either way. Ignoring the man in his English lord mask, I faced the executioner, begging his gavel to fall on my offer. £1,000,000, sir, and I walk away and never mention this again. What about the other girls? My mother would curse me for the shame and guilt I suffered at the thought of leaving this old woman, but she'd also be proud, because I'd chosen a path with decisiveness and conviction, something she said I'd always lacked. Happy now, mother? The room erupted in murmurs of deliberation while I stood in the sea of ebbing voices. For a moment, I stupidly believed I'd won, that I'd played my hand at the perfect time and earned my freedom. But I hadn't learned my final lesson. Pride goeth before the fall, and I was about to plummet.
I see your offer and raise you,
Lord Mask murmured.
£1,500,000, not dollars. What say you?
Before I could reply, before I could increase my bid and change my circumstances, the dreaded gavel fell.
Sold!
The auctioneer yelled.
To Mr. Lord for £1,500,000.
To no one. That was the last time I spoke. The last time I lost. The last time I knew what it was like not to live every day in pain. From that day onward, I was Pimlico the Mute, the voiceless woman in white. No matter what that man did to me, I didn't break. No matter the beating he gave me or the sexual punishment he delivered, I remained speechless and strong. I'd like to say I found a way to escape, that I ran, that I'm writing this to you from a quaint coffee shop in London, with a handsome boyfriend on my left and a best friend on my right. But I've never been good at lying. This toilet paper novel was never going to be fiction. This is my autobiography so that one day, when my worth has been used and every penny my master paid from me has been cashed, someone might recall the wordless slave who endured so much. Maybe then, I'll be free. Pimlico. Instead of counting what I'd lost and would never see again, I preferred to count what I did have. It kept me occupied as the transaction for my sale went through, the room emptied as successful bidders took their new possessions home, and my arms wrenched behind me for coarse twine to wrap around my wrists like some sort of twisted wedding ring. I didn't say a word as a blindfold settled over my eyes, with a blackening shroud. Nor did I make a peep as dominating hands guided me from the warmth and piano note-filled ballroom, down corridors I couldn't see, and through a foyer I hadn't witnessed. Soft voices were exchanged as I was pushed like a fugitive inside the back of a car, my white dress and scarf still decorating me as a prized toy, fresh off the rack. I didn't know if a beaten-up Honda or an expensive Maybach transported me from hotel this sex traffic to a private airstrip. I wasn't permitted to see or touch or move without the aid of the two hands that had purchased me. He didn't speak to me. I didn't speak to him. And the staff around us didn't need to speak because they had their orders and obeyed them explicitly. Ducking past the fuselage of what I guessed was a private jet, gentle pushes guided me up the gangway before directing me to perch on an unseen seat. At least, away from that dreadful no-sensory cell, I had what I needed. Snippets and sensations of life surrounded me. The city air on my face, the sounds of civilization as we'd driven down streets, past unsuspecting parents and lovers out for a stroll. And now, sitting on the softest leather imaginable, with my back locked, wrists bound, and no vision. It heightened the senses I did have. Tart scents of liquor, full-bodied whiffs of cinnamon and caviar, and a deeper, headier note of a man's aftershave. Throughout my imprisonment, I hadn't tried to free myself by being stupid. I never answered back, not after the first welcome beating, and not once refused the meals I'd been served. All such ridiculous notions of starving myself and fighting with words were removed within the first few hours of arrival. In these new circumstances, I wouldn't stop being wise. I wouldn't scream or cry or try to befriend my jailer. Instead, I would remain quiet and strong and never be idiotic by refusing whatever sustenance this man wanted to give me. I needed all the health and determination I could cling to. Icy bubbles of champagne were held to my lips. I hadn't tasted anything so sharp in a very long time. My mouth opened and I sipped. The flute was removed after precisely two swallows. Private jet engines whined into power. Someone pushed me deeper into the chair to fasten a seatbelt over my lap, and the crackle of an unknown pilot announced we were ready to take off. I wanted to know where we were flying. I wanted to know who this new adversary was. I wanted to know how long I could last before the mask I'd plastered in place on the podium would shatter. Papier-mâché only lasted so long before the elements dampened and destroyed it. What about a guise made of sheer stubbornness and rebellion? How long did those prevail? But wanting was different from receiving, and I had no choice but to sit back in my chair as we careened down the runway and shot into the sky. My ears popped with steep ascent, and no one muttered a word for a long time. No one moved to untie me or give me back the gift of sight either. Minutes switched to hours, and I stopped waiting for the man to speak. I relaxed as much as I could and turned inward, keeping myself sane by mentally preparing for the next step. I'd known this would happen ever since the bastard who'd strangled me revived me, thanks to mouth-to-mouth CPR. I had no one to rely on anymore. No one to tell me what to do and how to act. It was entirely on me. Whatever pain or mistreatment may or may not be in my future, I had to hold my own hand, wipe away my tears, and find comfort in my arms no matter how bloody. Terror existed in that acknowledgement, but encouragement too, because I only had to look out for myself. I could be selfish by being alone. I could lock myself tight from emotion and turn my heart as mute as my mouth. The other souled girls would be forgotten, so I didn't worry about their existence. My mother would be ignored, so I'd become my own person rather than her protege. It was the only way I could survive. As more minutes passed, and the plane cruised long enough for two air hostesses to serve the man who'd bought me and the pilot to announce we had another 1 hour of flying time, my nerves fought a losing battle. For all my positive thinking, I couldn't stop the tick-tocking inside, counting down to the next event I'd have to overcome. I tried to remain calm, to keep my rioting mind quiet from questions. But all I wanted was to know who I would have to endure while planning my escape. Who was this bastard who'd exchanged money for a life? What did he expect from me? And how often had he escaped with such a transaction?
Let's get the necessary introductions out of the way, shall we?
I froze as the man's voice broke the stagnant silence. His timing sent shivers down my spine, almost as if he'd heard my thoughts. Did he expect me to talk without seeing him, without watching his body language and picking up so much more information than I would if he'd kept me blind? I'd promised not to speak again, ever. But in this instance, it would be beneficial for me, not for him. I'd permit myself 3 words, a meager diet of syllables before I went back to starvation. Untie me first. For a long moment he didn't reply. Then, the slight rustle of his suit as he leaned forward and pushed my shoulders off the seat. My skin prickled beneath his touch, bristling with hatred. Doing my best to move away, I wriggled to the edge of the plush leather, holding my wrists out to make it easier. With a quick saw, the string devils around my skin fell away, their teeth muzzled for another day. The blindfold relaxed over my eyes, granting a smidgen of relief from the headache caused by its tightness. The moment I was freed, the man reclined in his chair. I blinked, fighting the glare of finally having vision again. He sat directly opposite me rather than across the aisle as I'd thought. He'd removed his mask, and the second I met his gaze, I wanted to slam the blindfold back on and have every sense forgotten. I didn't want to see, hear, touch, or heaven forbid, ever taste this man. The English Lord mask he'd worn had been far too kind for the monster beneath. Struggling to keep my face tight and unreadable, I tilted my chin. The urge to blurt plea bargains and terrifying questions formed a gag around my throat. I was thankful. He deserved no more words from me. He deserved nothing but a firing squad and my footsteps dancing on his grave. Back when life was safe and my only concern was what TV show to view when I couldn't sleep, I'd binge-watched police shows, forensic documentaries, and crime investigations. I loved working out the suspect before the presenter got to the real perpetrator, drinking in the DNA testing and glaring at each potential murderer on the screen. A lot of the time, the person who'd killed looked like any other neighbor or family friend. Old or young, rich or poor, they were just a person. A person with a darkness inside. However, when the camera zoomed on their features as the show's conclusion revealed their comeuppance, one thing always linked them together. Their eyes. Something about their eyes revealed the truth, just like this man's did. Something was missing. I didn't want to say a soul, because I didn't know entirely what that was. But it could also be something so much worse. An imposter, not human enough to feel compassion and empathy. People who killed and raped were cold-hearted, pain-thirsting demons. I'd been sold to that demon. He smiled, showing square white teeth and a tanned face. His dirty blonde hair pegged him as Swedish or maybe Norwegian. He had the same bone structure of the lanky Europeans with a long nose, pronounced cheekbones and piercing blue eyes. I guessed his age would be late 30s. An age where he could have been my father if he'd had children young. Wait, did he have kids? A wife? A family? We stared at each other, neither saying a word. It felt like a contest, battling for domination. But I knew better. He wanted me to walk into his trap. I already had by requesting he untie me. I'd done my part. The rest was up to him. He grinned coldly.
Now that you can see me, let's begin.
Leaning forward, he dug pinching fingers into my kneecaps. No one had ever grabbed me there before. But as his fingernails sank swiftly into the satin of my dress and curled around the pieces of bone protecting my joints, I suddenly understood how vulnerable knees were, how easy to pop off and rip away. I gasped, turning ice cold in my chair.
My name is Ulrich Asbjorn. To you, I'm Master Ray. Do you understand?
His fingers dug harder. My lips glued together, refusing to speak. I had the power over speech, but I didn't over my eyes. They glassed with pain as he continued to hurt me.
Don't have anything to reply?
His jaw clenched as he dug deeper into my kneecaps.
What happened to the girl who bid 1 million for herself? I rather like that bitch.
Agonizing discomfort flared down my legs, but I didn't break. I couldn't. If he won this battle, then I'd lost the war. I couldn't do that to myself so soon.
Gone shy on me? Fine.
Removing his threat, he sat back.
You'll talk. You'll see.
The relief around my bones throbbed with every heartbeat. I'll do my best that you'll never hear my voice again.
I see we'll have some breaking in to do, but don't underestimate me, girl. You don't want to mess with me.
Pulling a black file that I hadn't seen wedged beside him, he unzipped the leather shell and pulled out a sheaf of paper. Waving it in my face, he smiled.
This is you, the sum of your life, your friends on social media, your family photos, your personal messages, every silly thought and ugly reminder of your past.
His soft voice stupidly lulled me until he exploded in a violent outburst, throwing the paperwork across the wood and silver-trimmed cabin.
Gone. All of it. You are no longer that slut. You're my slut. You've been given the name Pimlico, and from now on, that's all you are. Got it? You're nameless, familyless, and mine.
His hand raised, and the lessons the traffickers had taught kept me subservient. I cowered before his strike, already giving him the control he so desired. He whacked me around the ear, causing a sharp ringing inside my skull. I bit my lip, holding back any cry or tear, bowing forward to send a wave of brown hair to hide my face. I needed to vanish, to disappear. He didn't seem to care that I didn't scream or beg. Rubbing his hands together, he grew calm again.